Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have this on the line from back there in Maryland, close to Pasadena, Maryland, Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. David, thank you so much for being with us again.
Good evening, Dan. It's a privilege to be on your show, Dr. Stan. I really appreciate your listeners, and I know that they care about their country, which is why they listen to your great program.
Well, thank you. Just speak right up there. And now we're going to be talking about the amendments to the Constitution. We've been on a regular basis going through the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, and of course then the Bill of Rights. And now we're getting up into the amendments to the Constitution after the Bill of Rights. So you pick up the story from there, David.
We've been talking about the 15th Amendment, actually the 13th and 14th, which were all part of the Reconstruction era, which is a terrible chapter in American history, when much of what our founding fathers structured to prevent the expansion of the federal government and to restrict its powers was being broken down. And each of those amendments, the 13th, 14th, and 15th, had a particular clause in them that actually expanded the federal power enormously.
David, are you on to a regular telephone hardline phone?
Yes, not being heard well right now.
Okay, well, go right ahead. Let's
I'll
pick up. Go ahead.
I'll just speak up a little bit louder then.
All right, fine.
And so we see in the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment a great strike against what our founding fathers designed, that the federal government was to be restricted within the walls of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Now we come to the 16th Amendment. There was an actual pause of about 40 years between the 15th Amendment and the 16th Amendment, and it's interesting to see some of the historic background of why the 16th Amendment was proposed in the first place. One of the things that was happening in the business world in the United States in the latter part of the 19th century was the development of monopolies that although legislation was written against monopolies, these monopolies structured themselves by a trust in which the information was not revealed as to who was really in control of the trust, and these trusts gained enormous power. And President Taft, when he ran for office, he won his presidency actually on a platform that when he got into office, he was going to bust these trusts. He was going to break up these monopolies, and he was going to reduce their power because people saw the kind of abuse that was taking place. And so on that trust-busting platform, he proposed before the Senate, and in a speech that he spoke in June 16th in 1909, and notice what he says in this speech about what he is recommending and ultimately what became the 16th Amendment. He said, "I recommend first the adoption of a joint resolution by two-thirds of both houses proposing to the states an amendment to the Constitution." Notice the specifics of this amendment. "Of an excise tax upon all corporations measured by 2% of their net income." So clearly what was originally proposed by President Taft was not a tax upon individual citizens of the United States, but rather a tax upon corporations. And the purpose of this tax was not actually to raise money, which most people would find rather odd. They think of the income tax and the whole bureaucracy of the IRS as a way in which the federal government raises money, but that was not the purpose.
Hold that thought right there.
Yes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. And David was saying that the original purpose of the 16th Amendment was not to raise money. It was to be a tax, a 2% tax on the corporations, so they would be able to then begin to find out what was really going on behind the scenes. At least that is what Big Bob Taft sold the idea under. But the question is that really what this was about, or were there other ulterior purposes? Anyway, why don't you pick up the story there, David?
You see, the problem was that Congress had passed an income tax prior to this. Back in 1893, they had passed an income tax, and the Supreme Court had ruled it unconstitutional. And they ruled it unconstitutional based on Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution, which says there can be no capitation tax. That is, the federal government cannot make a tax upon the head, that is, upon each of the individual citizens. The only legitimate tax that the federal government can structure is a tax that's apportioned depending upon the census to each of the states. So, for instance, if the state of Maryland had 10 million people and the state of Texas had 20 million people, well, the state of Texas would wind up paying twice the amount of federal tax than the state of Maryland. So it was never to be a tax upon the individual, because a capitation tax was specifically prohibited by Article 1, Section 9. Instead, the only way the federal government could raise funds, raise revenue, was to issue a tax, and that tax was to go to the state. Now, each state could determine how it would pay that tax in a different fashion. So they might have a sales tax or an import excise tax or whatever they chose as that state. That state would be able to determine how they were going to raise those funds that they were due to pay to the federal government.
But I think what's so interesting, of course, at that time, the two United States senators from each state were appointed by the state legislature.
Yes.
And so if those senators voted for a tax on that state and the people in the state didn't like it, that was the end of the senators. So there would be a definite tendency on the part of the United States senators to limit the taxes, and certainly to limit the function of the central government, so they wouldn't have to tax the states, which might mean that they would lose their jobs. So it was this idea that the senators were to represent the states and to be answerable to the state governments, not to whoever could give them the most money to get elected, as we have today. So I'll pick up the story from there.
And that's exactly the problem, that today we don't have any check on the federal government of any reasonable means, as was designed by our founding fathers. So our founding fathers were very wise in this. They recognized that it's very hard for the local individual citizen to have much of a say in Washington, D.C., because Washington, D.C., the representatives there represent so many people. It's far harder to have an impact in Washington, D.C. than it is to have in your own state capital. And so if your state had a direct power over how taxes were going to be divvied up within that state to pay what was owed on the federal level, then they knew that the citizen, the individual citizen, would have far greater power at his state capital than he ever would in Washington, D.C. So Article 1, Section 9 says you cannot have a capitation tax. You cannot have a direct tax upon citizens. And President Taft was not proposing a direct tax. He knew that that would not pass constitutional muster. The Supreme Court had ruled it unconstitutional when the Congress had passed such an income tax in 1895. Now,
But of course, what he was proposing was an amendment to the Constitution, which would supersede what was there before.
And so the idea was, well, how do we get around the Supreme Court decision? Now, the interesting thing is, again, it was the actual wording of the 16th Amendment may confuse people, because it's worded in a way that you have to understand how each term is actually defined to understand what it says. But as it is written, it passed constitutional muster with the Supreme Court looking very closely at it and actually determining, okay, that this is a constitutional tax. It says Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states and without regard to any census or enumeration. Now, if you just look at the words there, you would say, well, wait a minute, that sounds like it's in direct contrast to what is stated in Article 1, Section 9, where it says there will be no capitation tax, and any tax from the federal government will have to be apportioned among the several states in regard to the census. So it seems, and people, if they look at this on the surface, say, well, look, it appears there that the 16th Amendment overturns Article 1, Section 9. But that is not the case, and we know that that is not the case because the Supreme Court ruled in several clear decisions following the ratification of the 16th Amendment that that was not the interpretation of the 16th Amendment. By the way, we ought to at least note that there's a great debate about the actual ratification of the 16th Amendment. There's good evidence. Deason, I believe, is the fellow who's done the research that shows that the number of states required to ratify it, it was not done properly, it was not done constitutionally, but nonetheless, it is being treated today as a ratified amendment. And my point is, let's not debate so much about its ratification. Let's debate about what it was understood to mean by those who actually ratified it and by the Supreme Court, which clearly ruled on what this amendment meant. In 1913, it was ratified, quote-unquote. We know that there was a doubtful process by which it was ratified, but the Supreme Court in that same year, in the case Stratton Independence versus Hobart, explained that the income tax is an excise tax imposed on activities involving the exercise of a government-granted privilege. In other words, if the federal government granted you a privilege on certain privileged activities, then this 16th Amendment applied to you as an excise tax upon you acting as under government privilege for that. And so in that same decision, the Supreme Court also said that income is not the subject on which the tax is imposed, and that income is merely the measurement for determining the amount of the tax. And it's for certain people, non-resident aliens, that is someone who is residing in these United States but is not a citizen of these United States, they can be taxed by the 16th Amendment. Non-resident aliens have no rights under our Constitution, and they are given a privilege by Congress, so to speak, to allow to work, to invest, to do business, to enter into our country. Those are all privileges granted by the United States government. Citizens, in contrast, have the right to do these things without government permission. We don't need government permission from the federal government to work at a job and to earn a living wage and so on. And another case that was decided 3 years later in 1916 is also very significant because the Supreme Court, in the case Brushaber v. Union Pacific Railroad, this is a cornerstone decision because it relied upon, and this is actually one that the IRS today claims makes their activities constitutional. The case involved withholding monies accrued to non-resident aliens. Again, a category of people who were given specific privileges by the federal government. But this case, Brushaber, does not apply to citizens of these United States. And that nothing in the court's decision there exposes the facts that the 16th Amendment then does not apply to citizens as a direct tax upon them.
Well, unfortunately, though, David, that they have expanded it to mean that, and if you don't pay your tax, they're going to come after you.
That's right.
The practical point of view, and I agree with everything you're saying, but for our listeners out there, please do not get into this tax resistance movement because you'll spend all your time and all your money fighting the government, and they'll come after you. Doesn't matter whether it's legal or not. The government doesn't obey their own laws. Much more important to spend your time and invest your money trying to educate the American people as to what this is all about. Because if we're ever going to take America back, we have to have a concerned and educated public. Only then are we ever going to be able to redress the injustices. Incidentally, the person who went around to all of the states was a man named Bill Benson. He wrote a book called The Law That Never Was, going into the fact that neither the 16th nor the 17th Amendment were ever really ratified. And even the government has admitted that, but they said, look, it's been around for so long, why this is the way it is, and besides that, they need the government money. Why worldwide by the support of the people, of course. I mean, when they have all that money, they can certainly buy the politicians, they can buy various pressure groups here in this country, they can influence how the people feel about government. After all, when you're getting large sums of money from the government, why, you'll be very quiet. For instance, the faith-based initiative has certainly worked very efficiently to silence many of the major Christian ministries in this country from speaking out about what the government is doing, so they're not going to give up that money. So even though everything David says is absolutely right, David, would you agree?
Yes,
pay your taxes.
Yes, pay your taxes. The information is valuable for this reason, because as we educate millions of Americans, we can then send people to Washington who understand the original intent of the 16th Amendment, understand the limitations that were placed upon the federal government in terms of the type of taxation they could engage in, and we can return to the constitutional taxation system when we have enough people and when we have enough of our people who understand these principles in power. And that's going to take, as you said, a long, hard road. So it's not worth the battle of fighting the IRS and not paying taxes now. The long-term road and the ultimate success of our movement involves educating millions of Americans on these issues, and then those millions of Americans, in turn, either holding their elected officials accountable or getting rid of those elected officials and putting officials in who will uphold the original intent of the Constitution, because they will understand it and be committed to it.
Amen.
And that's going to take that's not a quick and easy solution, but that is the solution that will restore us to the constitutional republic.
Amen. Go ahead.
And so let me just look at one other case, because it's interesting to see that the Supreme Court at that time was extremely clear. Also in 1916, Stanton v. Baltic Mining, they held that the 16th Amendment created no new power of taxation. In other words, it did not change Article 1, Section 9. Likewise, in 1918, a few years later, Peck and Company v. Lowe, the court explained again the limited application of the 16th Amendment. It said this, let me just quote their court decision, "The 16th Amendment does not extend the power of taxation to new or accepted subjects." That is, the citizen of the United States is one of those subjects that the 16th does not apply to. "Neither can the tax be sustained as a tax on the person. Measured by income, such a tax would be by nature a capitation rather than an excise." And so the Supreme Court in 1918 clearly understood the Constitution, and they clearly stated the 16th Amendment does not change the Constitution, does not somehow alter Article 1, Section 9. Rather, it is applied to those who are given a privilege by the federal government, not a regular citizen, but a non-resident alien and so on, and businesses and corporations. But as you said, the evildoers have been working long and hard to lie to American people and propagandize our nation to a point where people now believe that the 16th Amendment, if they understand this at all, they believe the 16th Amendment changed Article 1, Section 9, which clearly at the time of its ratification and the Supreme Court decisions that followed, that was not the case. The Constitution was not being changed.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is the income tax did not really apply to the individual until the Second World War came around, and that's why it was so important. Oh, America was under attack. We were threatened. The Japanese were going to take our country at any time. Adolf Hitler was going to attack us at New York City. And so we had, of course, to begin to tax the people to raise a mighty army and a mighty armada to defend to defeat the enemies who had been funding. And you go back and you read what Congressman McFadden, who was the chairman of the House Banking Committee, was saying in the mid-1930s about the Federal Reserve System didn't have any money at all to get our economy going, to help provide the funds that would begin to bring us out of the Depression. But it had hundreds of millions of dollars to send to Stalin in Russia and Adolf Hitler in Germany. So we created the best enemies money could buy. And then, of course, we had to begin to tax the American people to actually be able to defend ourselves against the enemies we'd created. It's the greatest scam in the world, but it worked. And, of course, tragically, an awful lot of good people died in that war and in all the wars that have been fought since then and in the present war. And we just have to have the government having more and more money to protect our freedom. Well, our guest this evening is Pastor David Whitney. David, go ahead with the story.
And it's interesting that you talk about the money needed. When the income tax was actually proposed, the Treasury had a surplus. And people may be shocked to hear that, you know. It was not a money-raising initiative. In other words, they didn't need any additional money at that point in time. It was not a thing, well, we're broke and we've got to find an additional means of money. No, the federal government, because at that point it was, by and large, living within the constitutional bounds, only doing what it was permitted to do by the Constitution. As long as it remained within those bounds, the means of raising funds was adequate to meet the functions of the federal government, including going to war, all the wars, as you said, up to World War II, with the exception, I would have to correct myself, the exception of the war between the states, or as people in that day called it, Mr. Lincoln's war.
Or
Mr.
The
Lincoln imposed an income tax to fund his war, really a war against the Constitution.
In the South, they called it the War of Northern Aggression.
And rightly so. And you know, it was actually a war that was aimed at destroying constitutional structure and centralizing power in Washington, D.C., and it wildly succeeded at doing that. But so the 16th Amendment, when it was actually proposed, had little to do with taxing individuals, or nothing to do directly with taxing citizens, and was not a money-raising scheme, but it was more about busting the trust by finding out the information about how these trusts were functioning, by getting them to report every year on their financial transactions and having to pay 2% of their income. So if that was accomplished, then the federal government will be able to discover and break up these trusts that were by monopoly, basically breaking the laws that had been established before that time. Now, of course, the enormous growth of the federal government is indicated by the enormous growth of the income tax. As you mentioned, it was a very small percentage. It was to be a very limited tax. The average person in, say, $1994 would have the first $60,000 exempt. That if you made $60,000, you know, you wouldn't pay a penny. And after that, it was the tax really took a step up of 1% when you made about $300,000 in $1994. And if you made over what today would be $8,000-$10,000, then you would pay 6%, which is, you know, people hear those numbers, it's like, my goodness, with today, if you're making just over $2,000, you're paying, you know, way up there 10-12%, and then if you're making much more, your income tax is enormous. So the expansion of the federal government has kept pace with the expansion of their need to fund themselves. And you know, most people, when you talk about you know, the possibility of putting people into power in Washington, D.C., that would take us back to the constitutional taxation, they say, well, David, you know, that's not going to be possible. How could the federal government survive if it didn't have the income tax structured as it was? And my answer to that is, if the federal government returned to the constitutional restrictions and limitations placed upon it by the Constitution, then they would be able to, because they did for the first 150 years of the life of our nation. When they followed the Constitution, they had enough money to survive. You get rid of things like the Department of Education, completely unconstitutional.
Hold that thought right there. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution, and the question arises, how could our government possibly survive if it didn't have the income tax to fund it? And of course, the large corporate taxes that it has, and David's point is well taken. If the government was doing what it's supposed to do according to its own law, the Constitution, which is to govern the actions of the central government, why, it wouldn't need what the money that it has. It could get by probably on about 10% or 15% of what it has. Do you realize that the United States government spends, for the military alone, as much money as the next 20 nations in the world, equivalent to all the money China and Russia and Great Britain and France and Germany and Italy and the top 20 nations in the world spend as much money combined as we spend on our military. Why do we need such a big military to defend America? And, of course, we're not defending America. We are extending the power of our empire throughout the world, number one. Secondly, most of what the federal government is doing as far as health and education and welfare, as far as education, so much of what the government is doing is totally unconstitutional. And if we stop doing all of these things, why we wouldn't need the massive amounts of money that we are the federal government is required to take in. And even with all the money it's taking in, it is still borrowing, well, this last year it borrowed about $600 billion. Now, what's $600 billion? Well, it took us almost 200 years from 1789 until 1980 to acquire it was actually, 200 years, to acquire a debt of $1 trillion. And we ran up $600 billion just in last year. So we've got to stop the spending. Go ahead, David.
Well, you know, the other objection people have when I suggest this, they say, well, what about all those people employed, especially living here in Maryland? So many people work for the federal government that I know, but even personally. It's like, what about all those people that are suddenly going to be out of work and won't it be a tremendous economic disaster? And my answer is no, not by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, those people will be better off without those federal agencies because the job market and the companies that will be suddenly released and freed up from the burden, and there'll be an enormous economic surge because government, you see, never creates anything. It only, in a sense, is a leech on the economy, sucking off and draining the vitality of the economy. If there is less government interference and less government regulation and control, industry will expand and there'll be more jobs and more money in the pockets of every citizen, because most citizens, as we're just about to approach the month of April here, dread April 15th is that day when, oh my goodness, got to cough up for the federal government. And most people, when they evaluate how much of the year they spend working for the government, federal, state, and local, it's more than half the year. I guess Tax Independence Day is now, for most people, in July. So they're a slave of the government for 50% of the year, and yet they still, Dr. Stan, they still somehow don't get the picture that if they got government off their back and they return that money to their own pocket, they'd be better off. Which tells me that propagandists in our government have done an excellent job of lying to people and deceiving people about what is truly best for the citizens of these United States.
Well, when we had limited federal government, we had freedom. And as we move towards total government regulation of the average individual in the name of fighting terrorism, why, we are moving rapidly towards tyranny.
And the design of our founding fathers was very wise, because they understood, due to man's sinful nature, if you put a man in the position of power and then you don't put restrictions on him in that position of power, he is going to take more and more power to himself and to his position, and he is going to abuse that power. As Lord Acton said, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that's why they put the checks and the balances into our system of government. That's why they put the limitations they did upon the government, particularly limitations on the government's ability to tax individuals. They did not want that. They stated it very clearly, because they recognize if the government can tax individuals, the federal government, it will squeeze the life out of those individuals and take everything it possibly can from them, and what it returns to them by far is not worth the sacrifice that they're being called to make.
And the ability to tax is the ability to control, the ability to destroy. Our founding fathers recognized that. That's why they specifically stipulated in the Constitution there would be no income tax, there would be no specific capitation tax. They knew what they were doing. It's just a shame that we've forgotten the wonderful heritage that we inherited from generations past. We'll be back here in just a moment with Pastor David Whitney. We'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan. David, go right ahead now. Where are we going now?
And you had mentioned earlier, and we'll pick it up here, because the 17th Amendment also was ratified at that same period of time, and ratified in 1913, just a few months later, a few months after the ratification of the 16th, and the 17th Amendment was critically important because it changed our form of government. Our form of government was wisely designed by our founding fathers to not only include three branches of government, legislative, executive, judicial, and checks and balances between those three branches of government, they wisely, following what the scripture says in Exodus 18, wisely spoke about four levels of government. They spoke of the federal government, a state government, and then a local government and a town government. Four different levels of government, and each of those levels was to have certain powers and checks upon its power by the other levels. Particularly, the federal government was to be checked by the state government. So the state government was to have wide-ranging powers. The federal government was to have very limited, restricted, enumerated powers. And the state governments, in a sense, were to be the watchdogs for the federal government. And that's what the 17th Amendment destroyed, the design that the senators were directly accountable to the state legislatures, because the state legislatures appointed those senators, and therefore, if they didn't like how that senator was ruling, they could immediately recall that senator and place someone else in his seat of power. So the senators were directly answerable to the state legislature, and as you mentioned earlier, that meant that if a spending bill was going through Congress, which is where spending bills originate, but they have to not only pass Congress, then they have to pass the Senate, which means the senators would be wondering exactly if this is going to be beneficial for their particular state or not beneficial, and they would be likely to rule in a way that would reduce the spending power of the federal government, because they were directly answerable to the state legislature. And, of course, if a spending bill went through, then the bill was apportioned among the states, and it would go to that particular state, and that state would have to cough up the money to the federal government. If they didn't want to cough that money up, they knew who was to blame, their senator, and they could easily replace that senator.
And I think it's so important that people understand that the tyrant have always wanted to convert us from a republic to a democracy, because they knew that under a democracy that they would be able to buy the senators, buy the support of the senators, exactly as has happened. So once they were able to have the direct election of senators, they had, of course, put one more nail into the coffin of the American Republic. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Pastor David Whitney, and we do have Roger calling from Henderson, Nevada. But before we go to Roger, David, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with the Institute of the Constitution, how they can set up a local institute in their area, and begin teaching their neighbors about this wonderful Constitution that we inherited from generations past.
We offer a host kit, Dr. Stan, which is 12 lectures that are done by constitutional law professor Dr. Eismo, covering the material that we're talking about here on the program in 12 half-hour lectures. We give a student notebook that gives a detailed outline of each of those lectures, and then instructions for the host to walk his class through a series of questions. He has the answers, so looks like he's very intelligent, knowing exactly what he's talking about, but we designed this so that anyone, anywhere, with any group of people can actually teach them a working knowledge of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration, and the subsequent amendments. And they can order that host kit by calling us toll-free at Institute on the Constitution. It's at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. They can also order it on the web if they go to our website, iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com.
All right, fine. Well, we've got Roger calling from...
Hello, Henry. Roger.
Hi, Roger. How you doing?
Doing just fine, Dr. Stan. How you doing, Mr. Whitney?
Great.
Yeah, I like about where you're hitting about all the amendments, you know, and everything. On the 16th Amendment, let me ask you, okay, doesn't our taxation system kind of remind you of, like, socialism?
Oh, most definitely. Our current system is socialism.
Yeah. Also, I noticed like there's a couple states like Texas, here in Nevada, they don't have income tax, state income tax, because don't all the 50 states have lined up with the U.S. Constitution?
Mm-hmm. Well, each state can choose its own form of taxation. You know, they could choose to do an income tax, or they could choose to do sales tax or various other forms of tax, but that's up to each state in terms of what they choose to do.
So basically, the state doesn't have to have an income tax. Just be thankful you live in Nevada, where they have don't have an income tax. You want to come over here to California? They got a 10% tax they put on top of the federal tax. So you're very fortunate to live where you do, Roger.
Yeah, I know. In California, they have that taxation board and everything else. You know, they're really slaughtering you guys right and left over in California.
I love the name that they've given it. They call it the Department of Equalization. They want to equalize us all, make us all poor, is what they really want. Of course, except for the elite up in Sacramento, they get all their goodies. But did you have a question at all for our guest, Roger?
No, there's only one more thing. This one bring up with taxation. You know, if our government went to national sales tax, it sparked the whole economy, bring it out, you know, and everything, because when they're making us like slaves to George Bush and all the politicians, there's nowhere our economy will better get straightened out with heavy tax burdens.
Well, the national sales tax actually would not be a constitutional tax. The only way the federal government is permitted by Article 1, Section 9 to raise money, to raise revenue by taxation, is to issue a bill to the states, apportioned based upon their census. So Nevada would have a much smaller tax bill than California because the population of Nevada is much smaller than California and so on. That's the constitutional means of taxation. So we hear all these kind of proposals. So at election time we hear, you know, a flat tax proposal to do away with the IRS, and people cheer for that. But they don't understand that what we need to do is to return to the constitutional system of taxation wisely given to us by our founding fathers, which puts the choke hold control over the taxation back into the hands of the state legislature through, first of all, their senator, represented. So we'd have to undo the 17th Amendment, repeal that, and make senators accountable to the state legislature, and then abolish the IRS and allow only taxation to be issued to the states. That is, the state was given a bill, that state chose how to raise that money to send it on to the federal government.
Roger, but don't fall into the trap that the state sales, pardon me, the federal sales tax is going to be a solution. The solution is to limit what the government is spending. That's what you want to do. My fear is they're going to have a federal sales tax and the income tax, because remember, like a hungry lion, you can never give them enough.
Absolutely. What they want to do, they want to keep on taking us for a long, long ride and keep us poor. That's what they want to do. What we need to do is we need to get more patriotic citizens in Washington, D.C., and also at state level to take back our country. That's what we need to do, Dr.
Well, you get the people over there in Henderson listening to us and listening to Lou Upton, too, who does such a great job there.
Also, Dave, what's that toll-free telephone number for that constitutional tapes that you have?
You can order the host kit at our toll-free number, 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796, and we've designed this host kit because we recognize that the average citizen, first of all, doesn't know these things, and secondly, believes that they do not have the ability to communicate these truths to other people. And that's why this host kit's designed to do that for them, that you can gather a group of people in your church, a group of people in your own living room, or maybe in a community center, or we've had people that have rented out a room in City Hall and held a course there, because people all over America, if they understood the principles our founding fathers gave us, and they understood how flagrantly they have been violated by our federal government to this very day, they would be up in arms and say, wait a minute, we need to take our country back from these unconstitutional, unrepublican, and I use Republican with a small r, not the political party, but the design of our form of government, and we can take it back, but it's going to take an educated citizenry in order to accomplish that task.
Okay, well, thanks so much for calling, Roger.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Dr. Stan. You have a nice one, and you too, Dave. Appreciate it.
Good night.
All right, God bless.
Bye-bye. You too, bye-bye. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our guest is, of course, David Whitney, Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution, and we're talking, well, we're up to the 17th Amendment now, and that, of course, was for the of the direct election of senators. It was planned, part of long-range planning by those who had established a fascist society to actually destroy this concept of a republic and checks and balances, and now the senators would be direct election by the people. Isn't that wonderful? No, it was a terrible idea. And the individuals really didn't understand that. In fact, the 17th Amendment was not ratified by the states, as Bill Benson found as he went around to check on whether they ratified the 16th Amendment. They didn't ratify the 17th Amendment either, because back in 1913, there were enough people out there who understood the foundations of our freedom, who understood that we were never to become a democracy, we were to be a republic, and to limit the power of the central government over our lives, because that's how we would have liberty. But unfortunately, through the subsequent century, they've progressively dumbed down the American people, and the average individual honestly believes we're a democracy. The average individual thinks that isn't it wonderful now we elect our senators, and if you honestly believe that the senator reads any of the emails or faxes you send to him, why, you really are totally misled. Now, he may pay some attention if there's a massive number of people writing along one line, but believe me, the other pressure groups are doing exactly the same thing. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be involved. But remember, of course, he is answerable to the people who was going to give him, you know, $40 or $50 or $60 million is what it takes to be elected to the United States Senate here in California. How many of you out there in the listening audience have that amount of money to buy the support of the United States Senator or of your senator? Well, what we really need is have those senators answerable to the state legislature, not to the people with the big bucks who elect them. So go ahead, David.
And the 17th Amendment is people, if you present this idea to them, and, you know, it's kind of like a time warp. They say, what? This doesn't make any sense. And that's because people believe today that the large, strong, centralized government we have in Washington, D.C. is what our founding fathers envisioned. It is the furthest thing from what our founding fathers envisioned. In fact, they said in Federalist 45, I believe it is, if I'm remembering correctly, that the federal government was to be restricted, small, and limited. It was the state governments that were to have wide-ranging power. And the idea here, Dr. Stan, is that they recognize the problem you have with a centralized federal government is that that government has a monopoly kind of power, whereas the state governments do not have a monopoly power. For instance, if you don't like the laws and the structure and you don't like the taxation in California, you could move to Nevada, which doesn't have an income tax, or you could move to Arizona. You could choose where you want to live because there's not a monopoly of each of the individual 50 states, but there is a monopoly at the federal level, which is why they wanted the federal level government to be very restricted and the state governments to have a wide-ranging amount of power. So it was interesting to see the shift, because war between the states did a great deal to contribute to the shift, but the shift meant it was turned around. Now the states are, well, they're almost political subdivisions of the federal government now. They have to ask the federal government permission to blow their nose or ridiculous things like that. The states are now very weak, and the opposite design of what our founding fathers intended is what we have currently, and the 17th Amendment being, as you said, it wasn't technically ratified, but being considered as ratified and being treated as the law of the land, that 17th Amendment now has greatly weakened the republic that was designed by our founding fathers. And the republic design is, again, a representative system based upon absolute law. The law of God is the foundation. And when you violate the law of God, you no longer have a republic. And once you begin to do that, then you no longer have the protection. And most people don't recognize this, but the protection that our founding fathers established at the very beginning of life, liberty, and property, those protections are being stripped away from us day by day because we have lost the constitutional republic our founders designed for us.
And, of course, the next step will be to remove the sovereignty, remove the Constitution altogether, and begin merging us into the North American Hemispheric Union of Nations, and then the Western Hemisphere, and then, of course, into the New World Order. They know exactly what they're doing, ladies and gentlemen. Everything is planned ahead of time, from the rise in the price of gasoline, in an effort, of course, to get you to conserve and to get you out of your car, to the rise in the price of electricity. Oh, they sold us to that, to us. They were going to lower electricity rates. That's why we had to deregulate electricity. They knew exactly what was going to happen. They just didn't want the American people to know what was going to happen. So pick up the story from there, David.
And so as we move from the 17th Amendment, it was very shortly thereafter, 1919, that the 18th Amendment was ratified, and this is that the manufacture, sale, and transportation of intoxicating liquors within the importation thereof into the or exportation thereof from the United States and all territories subject to the jurisdiction thereof for beverage purposes is hereby permitted. So this is prohibition. This is you could say this was really a war on alcohol, and that's what it was—a war on alcohol. And, of course, this amendment, we know, was undone just a few years later because it didn't work. And there are some that say, well, prohibition would have worked, but those in power really didn't want it to work. And they had a reason they didn't want it to work. They wanted people like Joe Kennedy to become extremely wealthy by running rum from out of the country and other people making vast fortunes off the illegal liquor trade. And so it was enforced, very spottily, so that the backwoods moonshiner was the one that usually felt the brunt of the enforcement of the prohibition, whereas the big boys, who were big political contributors, no doubt, they were the ones that got away with it. But regardless, the interesting point here, Dr. Stan, is that at that point in the history of our nation, the people of this land understood that the federal government did not have constitutional power, granted constitutionally, to conduct a war on alcohol. They couldn't do it. The only way they could conduct a war on alcohol was if they amended the Constitution. And when we look at the wars that have been conducted since then, because we've had a war on poverty during LBJ's terrible reign in Washington, D.C., and, you know, a war on drugs. How many years now of this war on drugs that, of course, is being undermined by the CIA all along? And so, you know, and now it's a war on terror. Well, if you talk about these wars, a war on alcohol, a war on drugs, a war on terror, and so on.
Don't forget about the war on cancer.
Oh, yes. And the war on obesity that's just building right now.
You know, and, of course, they had the war on poverty as well. Hey, we've got
these are unconstitutional.
Of course they are. And the fact is that the federal government is not going to solve the problems. The federal government becomes the problem. Let's go to John calling from Post Falls, Washington. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Good evening, John.
Fairly decent considering the news. This nation witnessed an absolute atrocity, the murder of an innocent woman by a rogue judiciary. Mark Men in Black Levin has stated that the so-called impartial judiciary has become de facto politicians, and therefore we should treat potential judicial candidates with the same kind of scrutiny and wariness that we would with legislators. And David, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Constitution does not require a judicial candidate to be an attorney or even prior a judge. And I would submit that we would perhaps get better results if we'd maybe look elsewhere. And I'll just quickly add that there's only three people I can even think of that I would trust right now as a judicial candidate, and one's Roy Moore, Levin himself, and the Judicial Watch chairman, Larry Klayman. What are your comments?
Oh, I think that your point is well
taken.
But remember, John, this whole issue was manipulated to get an emotional response from the American people and to give us the idea that we're a nation of law, and even if we have corrupt judges, why, we've got to go along with it just like they did in Hitler's Germany. We've started down the slippery slope. It's about time we let people understand that this whole thing was engineered and manipulated. Hey, thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Let's go to Jack calling from Ohio. Did you have a question or comment?
Yes. Amen to the last caller. No bar attorney should ever be elected to public office.
Right.
In fact, the original 13th Amendment exclusively prohibited titles of nobility.
Okay. Did you have a question for our guest?
Yes, yes. In the articles, Pastor David, such as 13th and 14th Amendment and, other articles, that says, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, where it talks about citizenship and such, involuntary servitude. In Article 1, Section 10 mentions that the state will pass no law impairing the obligation of contracts.
Okay, now, was you have a question?
Yes. Well, I would ask him, wouldn't it be the case that in order for this income tax to apply, the United States has specific legal parameters attached to it?
Jack, it doesn't matter what the, you can argue all you want to. You don't pay your tax, they're going to put you in jail. That's the way it is. Then, unfortunately, that is the reality. And so let's go now. We've got Tom calling from Hurricane Utah. Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
Hi. Can you hear me, Dr. Stan?
Yeah, we can. Go ahead. You have a quick question? We'll take it in just a moment.
Yes, I sure do. In regard to the 17th Amendment...
Oh, hold that thought. We'll take it in just a moment.
All righty.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and just John, who was calling from Michigan just a moment ago, he wants to make the point that you can make all the arguments that the 16th Amendment is unconstitutional, and he may very well be entirely right. The problem is that when people spend all their time trying to figure out why they're not going to pay their taxes, and eventually the government comes after and puts them in jail, or if I have people on this program who are convincing people they shouldn't pay their taxes and their lives are ruined, I'm not doing them a favor. The government doesn't abide by the law. So isn't that true, David?
Yes, we need to turn it around by putting people into power who will return us to constitutional taxation. Even if we followed the original intent of the 16th Amendment, there would be no personal income tax. It would be corporations and non-resident aliens and so on. But in order to accomplish that, we don't win the battle simply by not paying our taxes. We need to educate millions of Americans in order to put people into office who will enforce the original intent of the 16th Amendment and the original intent of Article 1, Section 9.
Okay, let's go to Tom calling from Hurricane Utah. Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering now, what would be an effective means to get to return the power to appoint senators from each state? I mean, are there any groups out there working on this?
Well, Zell Miller.
Yeah, last year he said it from the Senate floor that they ought to repeal the 17th Amendment.
And he has been demonized and vilified and made fun of on Saturday Night Live. Why? Because he said what we need to do, one of the first steps to take America back, is what Zell Miller said. Let's repeal the 17th Amendment. That's the only way to do it, Tom.
That's right.
Okay, there's no way to just ignore the 17th Amendment and have the state just start sending appointed senators back to Washington.
Not currently.
No, we got to repeal the 17th Amendment. So you got to help us educate the people about what this is all about.
Yeah, I have been too. Great work, guys. Keep it up. I love
you
both.
Okay, thanks so much. Well, our guest this evening, of course, has been, as always, Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. And our hope, our prayer, is that you're going to begin to understand the Constitution, understand how we got to where we are. Because if you don't know how we got to where we are, why, you don't know where we're headed in the future, or you don't know the way back to freedom. David, do you have a parting thought?
Yes, Thomas Jefferson once said that anyone who desires to be ignorant and free desires what never was and never will be. And our listeners need to understand that they've got to educate themselves and their friends and their family and their co-workers and those that they go to church with. They need to educate a wide circle of people in their circle of influence in order for us to take our nation back and return us to a constitutional republic.
God bless you. Thanks so very
much. Thank you so much, Dr.
Bye-bye. Well, This is Dr. Stan, and of course, we have a number of things that will help you better to understand our form of government. We have a four-tape set called The Foundations of Our Freedom. It's four interviews I did with Dr. James Herson. And then, of course, we have an understanding of the First Amendment, that's the original intent, David Barton's wonderful, wonderful book. And then we have a book entitled The Wall of Separation. So that's certainly the four-tape set, The Foundations of Our Freedom. The book, Original Intent, and then The Wall of Separation. Now, we have a number of other books going into the Christian history of America, because you can't separate America's freedom from America's Christian history. If we were not a Christian nation, we would never have had the form of government we have had, and we certainly would have never had the freedom that previous generations enjoyed. So you need to get the book, Bill Federer's America's God and Country. That's America's God and Country. You need to get Tim LaHaye's book, The Faith of Our Founding Fathers, and then Abandonment Theology. Those three books give you the background of the religious concepts that led to the formation of this once great and free nation. But, you see, we've forgotten that. We don't teach that in school. We're not allowed to talk about the Christian foundation of this country in public places. And any politician who dared to get up and say America was founded as a Christian nation would be vilified by all the means of communication. He would be humiliated. He'd have to apologize. They would hound him. They would demonize him. And this is the reality of where we are today, ladies and gentlemen. Because whether you know it or not, whether you want to accept it or not, there is a conspiracy against God. That's what it's all about. They talk about it in Jeremiah 11:9, and as I remember, and certainly you have Ezekiel 22:25. It's all there. The second Psalm talks about this conspiracy against God. And that is the major driving force behind all of the secret societies and all of the mystery religions and all of the covert groups that are working now to destroy America, to merge us into a supranational body and then into the New World Order and the New World religion. And the major driving force behind this whole movement doesn't come from England, doesn't come from Europe, doesn't come from Russia. It comes from right here in the United States, because there is a dark side to our society as well as the good and wholesome and Christian. And that's the message of my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you have not read it, shame on you. You really can't understand what's going on today unless you understand the Brotherhood of Darkness and how all of the various secret societies, although they may at some times appear to be working at odds, are driven by a common goal, a common objective, a common dream, the New World Order, the New World Religion. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. You can find all, certainly our archive programs there. You can listen to us 5 hours a day on the internet. You can find our shortwave frequencies. Incidentally, the shortwave frequency for this evening's program, this hour, is going to change as of the 4th of April, that's next Monday. One channel will be on 5835, that's 5835. But if you're listening now to the other channel, we're going to go, I think it's 7.535. We're going to change to 7.465, that's 7465. And the afternoon program is going to go to 11.515, that's 11.515. So please tell others about it, and then, of course, go to our website and note that we do carry the Berkey products and a number of other products that do help us to stay on the air. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so, well, we'll be back here this next hour. If you're in an area where you're going to lose us, remember you can hear us on the Internet or on shortwave for the second hour. And if you are leaving us, why, we'll be with you again tomorrow evening. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Shane Ellison, and Shane has his master's in chemistry, and you had actually worked for some of the drug companies in the past, didn't you, at one time?
Yes, I did.
All right, fine. And but now, of course, Shane is trying to let people understand some of the disastrous consequences of what's really going on as far as the medicines that you are being told that you must take. And certainly one of the most beautiful examples of that was the Vioxx scam. And those of you who have never read what Dr. Graham said when he testified before the Senate last November, need to get hold of that testimony. We do offer that, or this will probably be my newsletter, not this month, but next month. And we certainly go into the background of what Dr. Graham pointed out, that before Vioxx was ever released on the market, why the Merck company had a study known as 090 that showed that you increase the incidence of heart attacks sevenfold. That's 700% with low-dose Vioxx. A year later, they had another study that was called the Vigor study. And that showed that you increased the incidence of heart attacks 500%, and that was with high-dose Vioxx. The drug was marketed, and you'll remember those wonderful television advertisements with a woman on her ice skates just skating across the rink with the children behind her, and the happy music, and oh, what a beautiful day, or what a happy day, and they knew that they were going to dramatically increase the incidence of heart disease. Now, they would have, of course, continued killing people with this medication, except for Dr. David Graham, who actually got an article cleared for publication and then testified before the Senate. But you don't have to worry. Merck immediately pulled their medication off the market because they were killing people. It was very obvious they were killing people. There were already class action suits. But the Bush administration immediately got the law changed so that that they would now would have to bring any class action suits in federal courts where they could tie them up for years. The FDA convened a panel of 31 members, 10 of them whom came from the drug industry, to find out if Vioxx was safe, and you'd never guess what happened. By a one-vote margin, they voted to put Vioxx back on the market, and it will continue killing people. They know what it's doing. According to Dr. David Graham, he feels that probably between 88,000 and 139,000 Americans had a heart attack or a stroke because of this. He said that's very conservative. He quoted another study published in the New England Journal of Medicine, 160,000. And that was just with one of those terrible drugs. But the average American has not been told that. And all they're told is, well, this might double your incidence of getting heart disease. No, it doesn't double your incidence. It's dramatically higher than that, and they know that. But because they control the media, you're not going to hear that. Well, tonight we're going to talk about the statin drugs. Shane, why don't we get off into this subject, because you've done a wonderful job going into the background of the health myths surrounding statin and many other things. So why don't you begin telling us a little bit about it?
Thank you. The health myth that I write about in my book, Health Myths Exposed, is that high cholesterol is a major factor for heart disease. And of course, this myth, being promoted by the drug companies, then ignites a scare within the community, within the United States, within the world, that people need to lower their cholesterol levels.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, our guest this evening is Shane Ellison. We're talking about the this whole statin scam, and it really is a scam. They are selling billions of dollars of the various statin drugs, and there are a number of them on the market. And we are told, oh, my goodness, you know, if you are a woman, you've just got to get onto them. You've got a cholesterol that's over 200. You've got to get 230. You've got to get onto these drugs. If you're anything over 200, why, you're in the danger level. And yet there are no studies to verify that at all. If you are an older individual and you've had no incidents of heart attack, there's no evidence at all that these help at all. Even if you are in a middle-aged male and you've had no incidents of heart attack, the number of heart attacks that are prevented by this are negligible, but there are all sorts of complications, including cancer. So, Shane, why don't you pick up and tell the story?
So with that myth that high cholesterol leads to heart disease, millions of people now are trying to lower their cholesterol. Men, women, they're even advocating the use among children because of the health myth that high cholesterol leads to heart disease. Their answer to the problem is the statin drug, Lipitor, Pravacol, Zocor. And they're promoting this use under the auspices of the statin drug trials. And they're demanding that, or asserting that, these drug trials prove indefinitely that they prevent heart disease. But when you look at without the statistical contortionist, and you look at the full data, you'll see that not a single one of the statin drug trials showed that the cholesterol-lowering drugs prevented heart disease. At best, it was a 3% reduction at best, and that was most likely due to bias. But that 3% of reduction is among men. It's never been proven among women.
And I think this is really one of the most important things. All of these studies were done on men, and when they did evaluate, of course, the women who were in these studies, they found out that it really didn't do any good in women. Wasn't that pretty much the impression you got?
Yes, that's true, exactly. They haven't been done on women. There's been no large studies done on women. The only studies have been recently where they performed what's known as a meta-analysis, and they take a few women from each study, and they combine the results, and they see that, in fact, lowering cholesterol among women does not prevent heart disease.
And, of course, then the subject is age makes a lot of difference. They want to get everybody, and men, all men have to get their cholesterol down below 200, or they'd like to get it down below 180 or maybe 160. And yet, actually, in the elderly men, it doesn't do any good, and doesn't it do potential harm? What do the studies actually show as far as a cutting back or death related to a high cholesterol? What are the absolute figures showing the mortality if you have a cholesterol, say, between 200 and 230, and you're a person, say, over 65?
That's a great question, because if a person is going to take any type of cholesterol-lowering intervention, then they face the dangers of having low cholesterol. Now, this is extremely hard for most people to grasp because they've been browbeaten to believe that low cholesterol is better. But what we see is that when you lower the cholesterol, getting to 180, total cholesterol levels of 180, 170, 160, the biggest danger is cancer. Most in particular, lung cancer. And what we find is that for every one drop per year, there's a 14% increase in death rates.
Now, basically, they've known this for some time, that it increased the cancer rate in animals, didn't they?
Exactly.
All right, now, but I was a little surprised that you're talking about every one point of cholesterol increased the cancer rate 14%.
Well, it increased the overall mortality rate.
Mortality rate, not the cancer rate.
Not the cancer rate. We see an increase in cancer rate, yes, in animals, but we also see it in the cholesterol-lowering drug trials, particularly with Pravacol. We found a 1,500% increase in cancer among users of Pravacol relative to the placebo group.
Well, now, of course, there is something known as the Delaney Amendment, which forbids prescribing or the FDA approving any drug that produces cancer in animals. So how did they get around that, or did they simply violate the law and ignore it?
Yeah, they get around it because the whole drug industry has been democratized. It's just a matter of vote. Majority rules, not science.
But science, it has to be science. It doesn't matter how the majority votes, because the majority can be bought off, as they were with that Vioxx study. 10 of the 31 people on the committee had ties to the drug companies. How can you get an impartial, situation? And nine of the ten people who had ties to the drug company voted to put Vioxx back on the market. If it hadn't been for their votes, there'd been overwhelming majority who said, don't put Vioxx back on the market. It's killing people.
Yeah, you would have used science to dictate that, but science doesn't dictate health. Democracy does.
And I think that you have to realize there have probably been, with all of the various the COX-2 inhibitors, and we're talking about Vioxx and Celebrex and all the others, there are probably over 100,000 people have died, and totally unnecessarily, heart attacks, strokes. They knew this was going to happen. They knew this from even before they were put on the market, and the American people are not being told that. All you're being told is the committee voted. But do you know who's on the committee? Do you know that some of the people on the committee said, we've got to go by science? Majority vote doesn't make science. What do we know? We know this drug is killing people, and they've put it back on the market and said, ask your doctor. If your doctor says all right, your doctor never read Dr. Graham's testimony. We have it. We'll be glad to send it to any of our listeners out there. If you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, or it will be included in our newsletter, if not this month, but month after that, the entire text of his testimony, totally blacked out by the controlled media, because the last thing they want the American people to know is that the government is allowing them intentionally to be poisoned. Now, let's get back then to the statin drugs, and we're talking about the incidence of cancer, and you point out that if you're taking this one statin drug, what is it, Pavacol?
Pavacol, yes. It Pavacol. Showed a 1,500% increase in cancer rates among users.
1,500% increase in cancer rates among users, and of course, they're increasing cancer rates in the others. They just don't have those studies, do they?
No, they don't, because studies usually don't last more than 5 years, and it takes at minimum 5 years for cancer to develop. I mean, even with heavy smoking, it would take more than 5 years for cancer to develop. But what's interesting is it's not just a statistical association between Pravacol and cancer. They've actually hypothesized a very good link or a mechanism or mode of action of the statin drugs, and that being they increase a molecule in the body known as vascular endothelial growth factor, or VEGF. And when that increases, you increase angiogenesis. It's kind of like a prime medium for the growth of cancer. Interestingly enough, you can cross-reference that with green tea, and you find out that green tea prevents cancer because it inhibits VEGF.
All right. Well, I think that there is so much about the statin drugs that really is totally fraudulent. As you go through the statistics, you find out that, you know, if you give them to older people in an effort to lower their cholesterol, they get into all sorts of problems. They get to the point where they can't think, and they can't think clearly. And that is because cholesterol is such an important part of the makeup of your brain is primarily fat and water, and you limit the cholesterol. Why, there have even been people who've actually got to the point where they lost their jobs. They couldn't even think. You comment about some fellow who's the head of a CEO of a major corporation. He couldn't even balance his checkbook and lost his job because he was on statin drugs.
Yeah, it's deteriorating the myelin sheath, like a copper wire has rubber over it, so that message can pass through, those electrons can pass through. The brain has a myelin sheath, so memory can pass through each cell. And the cholesterol, you lower it, that myelin sheath breaks down. The end result, you lose memory, you lose focus.
And, of course, they know all of these things. They just don't want the average individual to know this. So and then what about this CoQ10 that actually the statin drugs really lower the CoQ10, doesn't it? And
yes,
what
we've
is
got
CoQ10?
Cancer, we've got memory loss, and then the Achilles heel of the statin drug is the depletion of CoQ10, which is a coenzyme in the cell, especially in the heart, to produce ATP, or the energy source. So the heart can continually beating, and if you take a statin drug, you lower CoQ10, you lower the energy levels within the heart. The heart begins to weaken, and we have what's known as myopathy, or the heart congestive heart failure.
And, of course, the thing is that the average doctor He really doesn't know. The company is not going to tell him that if he gives this medication, why it's going to lower the CoQ10, or the patient may actually go into congestive heart failure. So he doesn't know. He's not going to tell you, and you're going to get into all sorts of complications without this. In fact, you have to understand how medicine works. I know because I practice it. And, you know, you don't have time to read all of the detailed analysis of all these medications, but they send some rather attractive individual, a very affable, likable young man or a very attractive young woman around to your office, and they're there with free samples for you. And they're telling you how wonderful this medicine is and all the wonderful studies that tell how this is really giving dramatic, increase in mortality and people aren't dying and you've got to get that cholesterol down. Would you like to talk a little bit about, how this whole scam is used and how they use these figures, the absolute mortality and the relative mortality, or the absolute improvement and the relative improvement, and how they toss these figures around to confuse people intentionally so the doctor really doesn't understand, it's not doing any good?
Yeah, that's a great point, because that's how most doctors and the general public are deceived, and I just refer to them simply as statistical contortionists. And basically, it can get extremely complicated. Statistics are probably the most difficult part of science or every study to grasp. And what's happening is that there's a difference between absolute mortality rates and relative mortality rates.
Explain, what's the difference between absolute mortality and relative mortality?
Yeah, if you're looking at relative mortality, which is what the drug companies use, then you're just looking at the benefits of the group that received the drug. So if you have heart disease, for instance, you can say that the relative decrease in overall mortality was 20%. But by doing that, you're discarding the placebo group. And when you bring this placebo group in, you have to use absolute mortality. And that's the comparison of each. So,
no, as you may have, you can only say, well, see, we cut back the heart attack rate by 20%, but if you compare it with a placebo, why, it was only maybe a percent and a half. In other words, the placebo group had, an 18.5 or 19% decrease in heart attacks as well.
Yeah.
And so, but you put these figures out here, and unless you know what they're talking about, why, you can't figure out that you really haven't had much of any improvement. I thought it was really so interesting what it says on the label for Lipitor, which so many people are taking. And what does that label say about how well it works?
It says Lipitor has, in the fine print, of course, because when you look at the absolute, not the relative, which is what the drug reps are using, when you look at the absolute mortality rates, it will show with Lipitor, which they've admitted on their ad, that Lipitor has not been shown to prevent heart disease.
Lipitor,
because again, they're not discarding the placebo group. They're actually using the placebo group.
Lipitor has not been shown to prevent heart attacks. Now, you have to understand that many heart attacks are related to homocysteine. Many heart attacks are related to something called C-reactive protein, their reflection of inflammation in the wall. At least half the heart attacks have nothing at all to do with cholesterol or cholesterol levels at all. And there's so many things that can be done. We have vitamin C and other non-toxic substances you can take. But the average doctor doesn't know that. He's told, oh, you've got to get these statin drugs. You've got to get the number down. And now, when I went to medical school, cholesterol was okay up to about 280, and then they got it down to 230. If you weren't over 230, you were perfectly all right. But you see, the drug companies couldn't sell enough of their product if they accepted 230 as normal. So they had to convince the doctors they had to get it down less than 200. And by doing that, they could sell literally tens of millions of dollars more in the way of products. And I believe it's a great scam. Because if you look at the scientific studies, you find out that they do not show a dramatic increase, especially in women, especially in older people, especially in children, and they're even very questionable. There are slight improvements in middle-aged men, I suppose, up to about 50. If you've had evidence of previous heart attack, but if you never had any incident of heart attack, why, it's not going to do any good. So if you've got a normal heart, why are they putting on this? Well, it's great for the bottom line, but not yours, theirs. We're going to be back in just a moment with Shane Ellison. And first, we're going to welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. He's got a great treatise. He's got all the scientific studies that most of you doctors have never read. Okay, Shane, go ahead, pick up the story.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Shane.
So, you know, looking back real quick, I think it's an important note to let people know about the difference between absolute and relative. And the relative is what's being used by drug companies. With Pravacol, they said that the relative risk reduction for total mortality was 21%, and the doctors fell for that. When you look at absolute, it's only 3.1%, and that's the best result that any statin drug has had. It's 3.1% when you include the placebo group. But if you discard the placebo group, you're showing much higher rates, say 21%, even 30%. And by discarding that data, the doctors have fallen for the myth that statin drugs prevent heart disease.
But there are a lot of doctors out there, I mean, a very responsible doctor who looked at this data and have written articles saying, this is a scam. And you even quote some of the doctors in FS and say, this really isn't doing any good. I mean, everybody's getting on these drugs. And in many instances, they're doing far more harm than good. Would you like to get into some of those studies that suggest that this is really not something we should all be doing?
Well, we have the studies showing the cancer rates. We have the studies showing the loss of memory because of the myelin sheath breakdown. And we have the studies showing that it depletes CoQ10 within the heart. Many doctors now are advocating the use of CoQ10 along with a statin drug, but there's been no study showing that by taking a statin drug and CoQ10 that you're going to increase or maintain levels of CoQ10 within the heart.
And I think this is simply just another example, exactly like the Vioxx, that they're more interested in the sales than they are in the health of the people. Now, the government now is really a pull off one of the greatest scams of all time. They've moved any lawsuits that can be brought against the drug companies from the state courts, where they should be able to bring these lawsuits, to the federal courts, where they can tie them up indefinitely with judges who will be very, very friendly to the drug companies and will ignore the terrible damage that's being done to the individual. I think we saw that recently with Terry Schiavo. So you have to understand that they want to tie this up in the courts so nothing can be done. As more and more people, I believe, are going to die as a result, they're not going to be saving lives, because actually, if you look at the absolute mortality rates, what is the absolute mortality rate on average, in the best group as far as the statin drugs? And I'm talking about the middle-aged male with severe heart attack. I mean, how many lives are we going to save?
It's a 3% increase in total mortality.
All right, now,
total mortality.
If you're a normal person and you don't have any heart disease, how many lives are we going to save?
Zero.
And see if you don't have severe heart disease, well, it's not going to do any good. And yet they're putting everybody onto this. This is what's the most incredible thing. And the average doctor has never read these studies. Now, Shane has written a very fascinating book, Health Myths Exposed. How can people get copies of your
book? They can get that book at Amazon. They can get it at their local bookstore. My website is healthmyths.net, www.healthmyths.net. And I like to capitalize on something you said previously, how they've, over time, they've slowly but surely lowered the so-called beneficial cholesterol level from 280 to 230 to 200. Today, the National Cholesterol Education Program dictates that within all human beings, total cholesterol should be at 200. What that means is that 105 million Americans have become patients, because 105 million Americans have cholesterol levels over 200.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Shane Ellison, his book, Health Myths Exposed. And you can get that on Amazon.com, or you can go to his website. Health Myths, is that healthmythexposed.com or org or what?
Just healthmyth.net.
Healthmyth.net.
Yep, plural.
Okay, healthmyths.net. And of course, Shane is pointing out that by progressively lowering why the accepted level of cholesterol, why you're going to have over, 100 million people are going to need these drugs, the trouble is, who's funding these various committees? They're all funded by the drug companies. These are not impartial groups of doctors who just get together. This whole thing is a scam, the propaganda, and the drug companies working in concert to get everybody on to these medications. Now, the background is basically this, that your major source of cholesterol does not come from the eggs you eat. The major source of cholesterol doesn't come from, you know, from butter or from dairy products. The major source of cholesterol is manufactured in your own body. And what they're going to do is poison your liver so that you'll have less cholesterol produced. That's what it's really all about. The question is, will you really live longer and healthier if you get your cholesterol down? And if you read the studies and you realize you're going to dramatically increase the incidence of cancer and memory loss and, of course, sexual dysfunction and CoQ10, you know, all of these things are side effects of this drug. And then you look at the potential benefits. The potential benefits are really very, very limited. And all the studies show it really doesn't do much good in women. It really doesn't do any good in elderly people. And I'm talking about people over, say, 55. I'm talking about men over 55 who do not necessarily have a history of heart attack. And even in younger men, unless they have a history of previous heart disease, you're not going to dramatically decrease heart current heart attack. In fact, it's not going to be dramatic at all. You're talking about 3%. So what they're really doing is getting it to change your whole lifestyle and put yourself in potential danger for a 3% if you already have serious heart disease. And I think that this is one of the greatest scams, right along with Vioxx and so many of the other things that they're doing, which are not intended to help the people, but I fear are designed to make large profits. And there may be another agenda, which, of course, we'll be addressing in my newsletter when we talk about Dr. David Graham's testimony before the Senate. There was largely, at least the most incriminating details, were blocked out by the media across America. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And our guest is Shane Ellison. Go ahead, Shane.
Are we taking calls?
Yeah, we are. We're going to just wait and see if we can get some people to call in, if they are really concerned and they want to know more about this. But I think this is really such a terrible, terrible situation.
Yeah, I would say that this is big, much bigger than Vioxx. There's far more people worldwide on statin drugs, cholesterol-lowering drugs, than were on Vioxx. And with the use of cholesterol-lowering drugs, you know, the danger is twofold. One is the direct result or the direct side effects from the drug, and then the direct side effects of lower cholesterol. Because you have cholesterol in every cell of the human body. It's the only molecule that's in every cell of the human body. It plays a huge role in longevity.
Does it make part of the membrane of the cells? Or where does it go to the cell?
It holds the fatty acids, which make up the membrane of the cell. That's akin to nails, which hold up wood, which hold up the house. And you could think of your body as being the home, and as you pull out the nails or you pull out the cholesterol, the house falls down. And I guarantee you that's what we're seeing happen with people who take cholesterol-lowering drugs.
Well, if you get this low enough, as low as they want you to, you're in real trouble. And yeah, I mean, the body, you know, is made to produce the cholesterol. You need the cholesterol. That makes it the building blocks of the body. And what they're doing is lowering this, and you say, well, they wouldn't do this. My doctor wouldn't prescribe this. It was going to be harmful. And the fact is, your doctor doesn't know it's harmful. He's never read the scientific studies. I've read scientific studies coming right out of Harvard. And, you know, the doctors back there, some of them are very, very concerned. Now, others are on the payroll or they're getting grants from the drug companies, and they're not going to speak out. Because if you're in academic medicine, and, of course, you don't get grants from the drug companies or from the government, why, you can't do research. If you can't do research, you can't write papers. You can't write papers. Why, your career is over. It's the old idea of publish or perish. And unfortunately, what we've done is we've made our scientists simply prostitutes for the drug companies. And this is the reality of where we are today. And the great tragedy is an awful lot of Americans are going to die because of it. And then there is another agenda. After all, many people will tell you they're just too many people around. We'll be back in just a moment here with Shane Ellison. My telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Give us a call if you have a question or comment. Maybe you don't believe it. maybe you'd like this documentation. Well, give us a call. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Shane Ellison. His book, Health Myths Exposed. That's Health Myths Exposed. And I've read, of course, what you sent me. Was that coming out of your book, Shane? Or
what I sent you was a free ebook that I offer online. That free ebook is available at www.health-fx.net. That's F as in Frank, X as in X-ray. And I figure with the masses using statin drugs, then they might as well be informed on the reality behind those drugs, because when I was a chemist working, making drugs for Eli Lilly, I found that most doctors and the public were completely and totally misinformed. It was only the chemists who were designing the drugs who were aware of the biological effects of these foreign substances into the body.
How long did you work for Eli Lilly?
After graduate school, I worked for Eli Lilly for a year and a half.
Okay, fine. Well, why did you leave them? Wasn't that a pretty good job?
No, it wasn't, because we were in charge of designing tamoxifen derivatives. The drug company Eli Lilly found out that tamoxifen was increasing cancer rates among women. And so our job was to design a tamoxifen derivative that's still bound to the estrogen receptor, blocked estrogen, but hopefully would not cause cancer like tamoxifen was, and we were unsuccessful in our attempts in doing that, and the project was canceled. We moved on, and I noticed that Eli Lilly was advertising tamoxifen as an anti-cancer drug, which was the antithesis of what we had found in the lab.
In other words, they knew very well it was going to produce cancer, and they were continuing to market. Is it still on the market?
Yes, it's still on the market.
And they know it produces cancer. Right?
Yeah, that was the catalyst for me investigating in health myths, and eventually the sum result was me resigning from Eli Lilly.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Ed, who's calling from New York, and the lines are lighting up now. Maybe when we get through with Ed here, why a line will be open. All the lines are taken right now. Hi, Ed. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. I'm interested in this particular subject because
right.
I went through quite a deal trying to analyze whether I should take a statin drug or not. I had a bypass surgery as a result of the balloon plasty going awry.
How old a man are you, Ed?
I'm 76 now.
Okay, fine. Go ahead. So you had an angioplasty. It went awry. Did you have to have the coronary bypass?
Yes, I had a triple bypass as a result.
Well, I thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is St. Ellison. Right now we have Ed calling us from New York, and Ed is in 76, and he is, of course, had a coronary bypass operation, and then, of course, the subject comes up, will he benefit from the statin drug? So what did you decide, Ed?
Well, after having taken statin drugs for a while, I guess a couple of years, I decided I wasn't feeling that great. Seemed like I was tired all the time.
Right, because the CoQ10 cuts out.
Yeah, well, as a result, I decided to take myself off from the statin drugs.
What happened when you did?
I felt somewhat better, but I started studying into it and found out that CoQ10 was necessary. I found from an advertiser that was selling nutritional supplements. And so I found that once I started taking CoQ10, I started to get feeling better.
Okay, and are you doing pretty well now?
I feel much better, yes.
Okay, fine.
I started taking the Longevinex about 3 months ago, and I had a blood test, and I had physical a couple weeks ago, and the report from the drug from the blood test was that my cholesterol was at about a total of 148.
Well, my goodness, you're going to have to start eating a lot more eggs. Okay, fine. Well, Shane, did you have any thoughts at all as far as the story that Ed's telling us?
Well, with all the research I've done, you know, I'm a real big advocate of cholesterol. The longer we live, the higher the cholesterol goes, the higher the cholesterol, the greater chance of us living longer.
And I think that's really such an important thing, Ed. You and I are getting older. We need a higher cholesterol level.
Oh.
And the idea that you're going to knock this down so you're going to live longer, I think, is really very, very dangerous. Well, Shane, what about the incidence of people who have had, obviously, have arteriosclerosis? Does when you get to be 76, does lowering the cholesterol do anything at all to prevent another heart attack?
No, there's no correlation between preventing heart attack and lowering cholesterol, none whatsoever. And, you know, there's a lot of advocates out there with natural supplements that will lower cholesterol just as good as statin drugs. But, again, cholesterol is vital to the human body. You don't want to lower it, whether by drug-induced lowering cholesterol or supplement-induced lowering cholesterol.
Okay, fine. Anything else, Ed?
Yes, I did ask. For the first time, I found out that homocysteine was a critical factor,
right.
And so the doctor never requested that I have my homocysteine level checked, and so I requested that and found out that my homocysteine was something like 12.6.
Is that good or bad?
Well, that's supposed to be, as I understand, between 6 and 12. And
yeah, that's correct.
So he gave me a prescription for a B complex to get the homocysteine down, but I couldn't understand why these people never asked for the homocysteine.
Because what you do is you get tunnel vision. I know, because I practiced medicine for so many years, not cardiology, but there's certain things you think about, and you're told over and over and over again, it's all cholesterol, and it really isn't. Half of them have to do with inflammation. A significant number have to do with homocysteine, and there's a real serious question how significant the cholesterol really is in the arteriosclerosis and the heart attacks. So anyway, you're going to have to get your doctor educated there, and you know, put together a great 14 supplement.
He wants me to get my my total cholesterol down to under 100.
Don't you dare do it. what you need to do is why don't you get health myths exposed?
Going below 100, even going near, even at 140, you know, you're talking about suicide in slow motion.
Right, and, really. But he's a victim. He's a victim of the propaganda from the drug companies. And you need to get the information. Why don't you get the book? And I'll tell you what, it's really fascinating, just what I've read already of Shane's material. And we have the same material from Bill Sardi, from Dr. Blaylock. And we need to get this information out. We need to get you to educate your doctor. I'm sure he's interested in doing the best thing for you, and he's hurting a lot of patients because he just doesn't know.
Well, I'm trying to educate some other people that are on the statin drugs.
All right, fine. Well, you get them to listen to our program, Ed. God bless you. Thanks. What part of New York are you in? Is it up around Albany?
It's actually west of Albany, about 80 miles.
All right. Well, God bless. And thanks so much.
Best of luck to you, Ed.
Right. Let's go to David calling from, is this Corona, California?
Corona, California.
Southern okay, California. Fine. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I had a question. Before I ask my question, you guys are talking about eggs. Isn't the cholesterol in the eggs actually the good cholesterol?
You want me to answer that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I haven't been able to distinguish between good and bad cholesterol. I don't adhere to, the rhetoric of good and bad cholesterol. I'm a firm believer in that the pharmaceutical companies have simply mislabeled LDL cholesterol as bad simply because it's a component of many different components of plaque within the arterial wall. So I don't adhere to the bad or good cholesterol. Within eggs, yes, we do have plenty of cholesterol. But the main source of cholesterol is from the liver. And if you consume eggs,
then it just down, the liver just down regulates the production of cholesterol.
And that's, see, the doctor can tell you that. Ordinarily, your liver wants to produce the cholesterol because they need that. You need that for your brain cell. You need that for your cellular function. And what they're doing is poisoning your liver.
Yes, and if you don't eat it from, if you don't eat cholesterol from diet, then what happens? The liver starts producing a lot more cholesterol because it's so essential. Without it, we would die.
And of course, if you eat a lot of cholesterol, then the liver downsizes and doesn't produce so much. You know, the Lord gave us an amazing mechanism. If we just don't interfere with it, and what we're doing is interfering with it, and going to get into all sorts of problems.
Okay. Also, does it lead to this? I notice, like some of the HMO doctors, like some of my doctors, they don't really recommend doing the high homocysteine test. They just mainly concentrate on the cholesterol. Didn't they ever read about the studies by Dr. McCulley from Harvard University?
No, probably they never did. And so you're going to have to get them educated. You're going to have to get copies of those things. There's so much that the they really don't know. They go to their meetings, and the meetings, so many of them are funded by the drug companies, and the magazines they read are funded by the drug companies, and their medical organizations are subsidized by the drug companies, and they really don't get the information. This is why I want you to get educated, and you get to them, and you educate them, so they can take better care of their patients, because they really like to. But they don't know about cysteine. They don't know that half of the heart attacks have nothing to do with fat at all.
Yeah, and I think even with this stuff, it's even written in the Journal of American Medical Association, or was it the Journal of New England Journal of Medical Association, one of those, that even talked about the B6 and B12 folic acid that can actually lower the high homocysteine level.
What about, Shane, you're probably on better on that than I am. Do you know?
Well, it's well documented in New England Journal of Medicine, Journal of American Medicine, B12 folic acid lowers homocysteine levels, but the American Heart Association is not adhering to that, and the doctors are getting their orders from the American Heart Association, and the American Heart Association is getting their orders from the NECP, National Education and Cholesterol Program, and that's completely funded by the drug industry.
So I wonder why they're just not telling the doctors about homocysteine. Maybe there's not much money in it.
B12 folic acid, you know, you're looking at $5, $10, $15 a month.
Right.
Okay. Anything else, David?
Well, it just seems like they're all on the same gang. Big conspiracy. you know, it's the pharmaceutical companies and inviting into their profits.
And the FDA and the NIH and the CDC, they're all in this thing together. Now, there are good people working at the FDA, like Dr. David Graham. And they've crucified him. And because of what happened to him, the rest of the good people there are afraid to speak out. So we're going to have to just do an end run around these people, these wicked people, and get the public educated, and then, of course, help the people like David Graham, who had the courage to speak out. He ruined his career after 20 years. They're after him. They're going to destroy him. Oh, he's one of the most courageous men in America, and he will save hundreds of thousands of lives because of what he's done.
Yes,
he seems to be doing God's work, and that's the more important work than what some of these other guys are doing. And these other people, I guess, are going to be judged for not spreading the good that they should be spreading.
Amen to that. Well, your job is to get the information, get the scientific facts, and we'll try to provide them for you. Of course, we'll be putting together 4 tape sets, but Shane has got together a lot of great information, and you can get the source material. You can go to your local medical library, because there'll be one in every large hospital, and they can get these studies for you.
Yes, everything's well documented in the book for doctors, professionals who want to go seek that information out for themselves.
Okay, thanks so much for calling, David.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, David.
Bye-bye. And let's go to Tom calling from Ohio. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. And is this Tom calling from Ohio?
Yes, Dr. Stan, I wanted to talk to you about, I had to go to the hospital last weekend, and I don't usually go to hospitals, but they said I had a 6-millimeter kidney stone, and the pain was unbelievable, and they said they took an x-ray of it. I never saw the x-ray. They wouldn't discuss it with me. They just told me it was 6-millimeter kidney stone, and it probably had broken up, and I never noticed it, but on one of the IV bags hanging on that deal over the little pump, there was a bag of Cipro. they were giving me Cipro, and I didn't even know it.
Well, of course, were they worried about a urinary tract infection, or were they going to, of course, give you one of these ultrasound treatments to try to break up that kidney stone, or what were they going to do?
Well, they couldn't. The specialist was out of town for the group because of the holiday, Easter holiday, and they couldn't get anybody. I don't know if the Cipro is. Do you think it'll be any harm to me?
Well, the thing is, Cipro is a very good antibiotic. The problem is that it does attack the collagen, and so it weakens your Achilles tendon or your supraspinatus tendon. So just don't be doing any playing any tennis or anything going to put a stress on those tendons for about 6 weeks. And after you've finished the Cipro, after about 6 weeks, by the tendons tend to regain their strength. So that is the major disadvantage of the Cipro. I'm sure they must have found some pus or something in your urine to justify giving you that.
I see. That tape that you offered for the doctors to listen to, how much is that tape on the drug?
Well, basically, of course, we need to put together a four-tape set on statins. I haven't done it yet. We have all the four-tape sets. It's just a matter of getting around to doing it. I laid out, I think, three or four new four-tape sets just last night for my son to put together. But we will put together a four-tape set on the statin drugs with the interviews with Shane and with Bill Sardi and with Dr. Blaylock, and we'll have this available probably in about 4 weeks. But right now we're in the process of putting together. I've got to give four talks here the first of next month, so I've got to get those done before I do anything else.
Well, that was a situation that Dr. Graham, or David Graham, was in. Was he a doctor?
Yes, he was a doctor. He was had his master's in public health.
What did they do to him?
Well, he was the assistant a director of drug safety at the FDA, and they pulled him out of that, and I suppose they probably got him someplace classifying the congressional record or something. They are not going to let him do anything at all. They're going to take him out of being effective and his scientist, and they'll hound him until he either quits or retires. That's the standard method that they use when somebody has, of course, exposed the close relationship between the high officials and the FDA and the people who run the pharmaceutical company, because the government officials, then when they retire, they go to work for the FDA or for a public relations firm they go to work for the pharmaceutical industry or a public relations concern that is employed by the pharmaceutical industry, and they get a lot of money, and they simply sold their souls.
Will you be at your tape 800 number tomorrow where you sell the books and tapes? Will you be able to be reached in the morning?
Yes, you can reach me. I'll be around.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Thank you very much.
God bless you. Thanks so much. And, of course, I think we just need to get this information out. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Shane Ellison, and he's written a great book on health myths exposed. So you want to talk about any of the other health myths?
Yes, many of the health myths I speak about in my book revolve around the drugs that are currently on the market that have not been told and kind of lay low underneath the radar, off the screen of most doctors who are still prescribing them. We also talk about myth number 9 is that the cure to obesity is simply dieting. And we discuss why that's false and the true factor in obesity.
Well, what is the true factor in obesity?
Well, the number one, and it's interesting because it also ties into the prevention of heart disease. And the number one factor to obesity, the biggest risk, is sugar intake in the form of sucrose, corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup, things of that nature. And with obesity, it just ignites insulin from the pancreas, and it blocks what's known as thermogenesis. And thermogenesis is basically our right to be thin, our God-given right to be thin. But when we're consuming these foods that have been laden with sugar, we block out thermogenesis, and the body can no longer burn fat. Instead, it burns carbohydrates. And by not burning fat, we store it. And with respect to heart disease, that sugar constantly being in the bloodstream, it becomes what's known as oxidized, and it simply becomes the molecular structure of glucose changes, and that change is called an advanced glycated end product, or simply an age product. And like a knife carving into clay, that age product, in addition to enhancing obesity, will scar the arterial wall like a knife in clay and build plaque, because plaque is nature's band-aid. And over time, that plaque buildup due to sugar or age products results in a heart attack or stroke.
Okay, well, let's go to Joan, who's calling from Wayne County. I guess that's Michigan. Hi, Joan. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. How are you tonight?
Doing fine. How are you?
Great. I have a question to ask you. I take psychotropic drugs. You know what those are, don't you?
You take psychotropic drugs. Would you like Prozac or Zoloft or Luvox?
No, I don't take any antidepressants.
What are you taking then?
I take Depakote and Klonopin.
Okay.
And I want to ask you about Depakote because I know it can cause liver damage.
All right, does that
and
maybe...
And I just had a blood test a month ago.
All right.
And it came out good, normal.
All right, well, we'll ask Shane because that's maybe more of his field than mine.
But I have been taking it for about 8 years.
All right, Shane, do you know anything at all about
the medicine
she's talking about?
Yeah, there is significant liver damage associated with it. Also, insulin resistance is a major side effect of psychotropics. Most people who are on those drugs are overweight.
I have a definite weight problem.
Hold that, just a moment. Well, our guest is Shane Ellison. Hi, and of course, we're talking about his book, Health Myths Exposed. And Joan was calling in from Wayne County, Michigan. She's on the psychotropic drugs. Shane was saying that they do produce problems as far as obesity is concerned. What are some of the other problems, Shane?
Yeah, obesity, the biggest thing is it causes insulin resistance being first and then eventually diabetes. Most people who are taking the psychotropics as well as the antidepressants are overweight as a result. There's no dieting. There's no fat loss supplement. There's no fat loss drug that's going to help that. In addition to that, they are foreign substances to the body, so the liver has to process these drugs. And as time goes on, the liver breaks down. It can no longer function. Most people rationalize that because they're getting their liver tested, they're going to be okay. But once the liver's damaged, it's going to be very hard to repair it. So it's not as if, oh, you go in and, oh, your liver's damaged. Well, let's get you a new one. It doesn't happen like that.
All right, fine. So.
Oh my God, this sounds horrible.
Well, anyway,
I figured it was something like that. I figured they weren't telling me all the facts.
Are you depressed, or why are
you
taking?
Oh, I'm not depressed. No.
Why are you taking the medications?
Well, the doctor gave it to me for mood swings.
Okay, so you did have.
It's an anti-seizure medication. I know that much.
All right, fine. Well, of course, you're just going to have to get a good doctor that you trust, that you can work with, and without actually having somebody who can actually go over you. It's pretty hard to say, but all these medications do have side effects.
Well, I can't take any other medication because every one of them makes me sick.
Right. Well, Shane, do you have any suggestion at all for Joan?
I don't. You know, there's a lot of lifestyle factors.
Over the years, I didn't even think I was mentally ill, but they gave me all these different medications.
Okay.
And every one of them made me sick. They gave me antidepressants, you name it. Whatever they gave me made me sick. Lithium, everything.
Well, sometimes, you know, a real good diet can change it. Have you ever gotten any of Dr. Lorraine Day's material? She has a video called Turn on the Lights, which talks about the mental depression that many people have. That she's been able to help simply with diet. But, hey, we're out of time. If you'd like to know more about that, you're welcome to call me off the air, okay?
Okay, now dial the same number.
Yeah, well, no, you dial the 1-800-544-8927 sometime tomorrow. But God bless you, Joan.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Thank you so
much. Shane, we're out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
I sure do. It's important. I think you've been promoting this throughout the show is that we have to take our health into our own hands, and if we are going to visit our doctors, we need to take an active role in educating our doctors so we can work one-on-one with our doctors and make informed decisions and instead of blindly taking doctors' orders. There's plenty of ways to do that. Health Myths Exposed, my free ebook at health-fx.net is superb.
Now just do that website one more time.
Yep, www.health-fx.net is the free ebook, and my website is healthmyths.net.
God bless you. Thanks very much for being with us, Shane. We'll have to get you on again sometime real soon. Thanks so much.
Sure.
Okay, well, I guess this evening has been Shane Ellison, his book, Health Myths Exposed, and fascinating material that I think that everybody needs to know, especially this thing about the COX-2 inhibitors, the statin drugs, and so many other things out there. And sometimes the more medicines we take, the more problems we have. So there are certain things that medicines are wonderful for. Antibiotics are tremendous when properly used, and certainly the cardiac medications are great, but so many of the things that we're taking, that we have statin drugs, and these are multi-billion dollar products, and of course they're doing multi-billion dollar damage. So certainly if you'd like to get the one excellent book we carry, it's called Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. That's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. I've written by Dr. Blaylock. We carry Dr. Blaylock's second book, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills, going into the background of the effect of NutraSweet, that's aspartame and MSG, on our health, and because these are excitotoxins, and they actually do damage to the brain, and of course they produce, in many instances, permanent lesions in the brain that lead to a permanent obesity, a morbid obesity, and nothing you're going to do is going to stop that. It happens in animals, it helps in humans, and that's the last thing they want the public to know about. Well, there's so much more to this story, we don't have time to talk about it. Let me suggest our video, None Dare Call It Genocide. That's None Dare Call It Genocide. You'll learn a lot about the things we're talking about. We have an excellent video that of talk Bill Sardi gave at our seminar last fall. That's Bill Sardi's seminar video, which we do carry, and then my talk, None Dare Call It Genocide. And then, of course, you would like to get some of the other material we have. We have 4 tape sets on fluoride. We actually have 2 4 tape sets on fluoride. We have a 4 tape set on mercury. We have a 4 tape set on aspartame. If you'd like a free copy of our catalog, we'd be glad to send you one. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And we could certainly suggest that we'll get you a copy of one of our newsletters. Perhaps our November newsletter goes into the background of how they're poisoning our children and our children's minds with fluoride and drinking water all across America. 67% of our communities have fluoridated water, and 90% of those they add hydrofluorosilicic acid, which is about 50% fluoride, and then the rest is lead and arsenic and cadmium and polonium-20. Why are they putting it there? Why? Because it's too expensive. They put in a toxic waste substance. It is so caustic and so expensive. And so they come up with a wonderful solution. They're going to put it in the drinking water. And they know, according to EPA standards, that it will increase the incidence of cancer. 1 in 1,000 people will get cancer because of what they're doing. And they don't care. And you're not hearing about it. Your doctor doesn't know this. And your dentist doesn't know that. They don't want to hurt you. But you're going to have to get the facts, you're going to have to get the documentation, and you're going to have to help us educate them about what's really going on behind the scenes, and understand that behind all of this is organized evil. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, the book, the video, the audio tape, or get all three of them together, the Brotherhood of Darkness special, and then pray for America. Pray for revival, pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this battle, you know, 7 days a week. So until tomorrow evening, we'll be with you once again. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.